Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, what is the ideal image of women in the eyes of Islam?
Despite some of the Western media's attempts to portray Muslim women as religiously and politically oppressed, women in the West are continuously being objectified in the media through magazines, films, and advertising. Some Western researchers argue that this representation symbolizes a more dangerous oppression because it degrades women. Islam condemns such objectification of women and demands its followers show respect for women on the merit of their intelligence and manners. As the Chief Judge International Court of Justice, Pierre Krebeitz, once wrote, Muhammad, 1300 years ago, assured the mothers, wives and daughters of Islam a rank and dignity still not generally assured to women by the laws of the West. With some Western countries banning veils and niqabs in the name of liberating women, many women believe it is a symbol of liberation and protection. These conflicting views about the image of women in the West and Islamic societies are being debated in several forums. This week's Islam in Life asks, what is the ideal image of women in the eyes of Islam?
There is definitely a conflicting perception between what we call the West and the Muslims as to what is the ideal image of women. From an Islamic perspective, there are some understanding and principles and objectives that we have to respect. And sometimes the perception in the West is, oh, this is all backward, this is against women's rights, and the image is quite distorted. So how can we change this image? And what is the ideal image that the Muslims should promote and get, and also defend within the Muslim communities in the West? These are critical questions where the Muslim should be involved, and it's a two-way process. You can't change the perception if you don't come to the substance of the question and the substance of the challenge itself. So to answer all these questions, I'm joined by Amina Inlouz, who is a lecturer for the MA Islamic Studies at the Islamic College. Thank you so much for being with us today. As we were saying, and we just watched the clip, it's the perception, conflicting perceptions are clearly there. When we have, for example, in France or in Belgium, or even now they are talking about it in Italy, banning or in the Netherlands, banning the niqab or the veil covering the face, or even the headscarf in schools. Not only this, what they are saying is that these are symbols of subjugation is against women's rights. And on the other side, the perception for the Muslims is this is the ideal for a woman to be liberated from anything which is not the relationship to God. So if you have to come to the first theological, legal and philosophical discussion about this, what could be and what should be the Islamic discourse as for this ideal image of women in Islam?
Well, I think with regards to what you're mentioning about the conflict in the West about the head covering, or in some cases face covering, of course, keeping in mind that this is only one very small aspect of Islamic teaching. Sometimes we put so much emphasis on the hijab that we forget there are many other teachings which are even given more importance. Of course, all of the teachings are important. But one of the things that I think it's worth keeping in mind is that Western culture historically versus Islamic societies has interpreted head covering slightly differently from a religious perspective. I would also just insert in here that I'm not necessarily in favor of creating a dichotomy between Islam and the West. This was, I think, a valid way to describe the world maybe even 50 years ago, but nowadays there is a permanent and substantial Muslim presence within the West. There are Western Muslims such as myself. Of course, there have been for hundreds of years in various countries, but Muslims have come to the forefront in the past few decades. So I don't think it's possible to really have this absolute separation. But nonetheless, you were referring to a sort of difference of paradigm. And one of the things that really...
Perceptions, even, is that what we are talking about is that I completely agree with the fact that the dichotomy and this binary vision is problematic and counterproductive. Still, when you deal with people in the West, their perception is, if they look at you, they say, okay, look, you are the symbol of subjugation and not liberation. What would be your answer to that?
Well, I don't like to generalize. I know there are some people who look at women who are covered in a certain way and they say, oh, you poor thing, you're oppressed, you're subjugated, yeah, as you said. Yeah. But some people also do praise the hijab or modest dress, and they say, we think this is something that does seem positive and it wouldn't be something we would object to. And they say it has a certain modest beauty to as opposed to much of the immodest beauty is popularized. So it really depends on who we're speaking with. But I do think part of the issue traces back to some different religious discussions of the head covering. Because when we look in the Christian tradition, historically the head covering has been described as a symbol of subjugation for women. So women should cover their head as a symbol of submission, whereas men should not cover their head. This idea goes fairly far back. I'm not saying everyone agrees with it, but this was one of the reasons why head covering specifically was rejected by a lot of feminists here for symbolic reasons. Whereas in the Islamic world, and among other peoples as well, head covering, well, for one thing, it is recommended for men. It's necessary for women, but it's something which is praised for men too, so we don't have a gender difference in this regard. But it's not perceived in general, or it's not presented in Islamic scholarship as something with a lot of these ideological forms of ideological baggage, such as being a symbol of submission or voicelessness, etc. It's really described primarily in the context of being modest. But
this is exactly the point, and I think that what you said at the beginning is that we have to be very cautious not to be obsessed with the, you know, the headscarf and scarf, because this is not the essential teaching. But many people who started to study Islam and to study the status of women within Islam are saying, at the end of the day, the symbol is showing something which is deep within the tradition, which is an image of Muslim women not being visible in the public life, not getting the same rights, not having their freedom and autonomy. So now if you think about this, and this is the reality of our society now, willing it or not, the populists are gaining ground against Islam by targeting this. They say, look, the way the Muslims are treating women is just showing you, the society, how much Islam is alien to the West. We need to answer this. So how would you tackle this?
Well, I do think that's a very patriarchal viewpoint, especially from people concerned about women's rights in the West, to look at the entire Muslim world and say this is how the Muslims are treating their women. In and of itself implies that women themselves do not have any power or independent agency or choice. And that's definitely not true when it comes to the headscarf or other forms of covering. In general, there has been a movement, as you know, the past century to return to that. And
but beyond the headscarf, as the status of women within the society, what would you say?
Well, I think that's a very complicated question. I don't think it's possible to reduce it to something simple. If you want to speak theologically with regards to the Holy Quran, which might be much easier to do, women and men are discussed essentially at the same, in the same manner spiritually. The people are given the same responsibilities, whether male or female, such as worshiping God, serving God, standing up for justice, protecting each other, also doing good in society, being charitable, etc. And this is one of the things the Holy Quran does explicitly state out, as you know, that these responsibilities are for both men and women. So if you want to talk about the status of women in Islam, although I'm aware this would not really be a popular way to do it in perhaps the mass media here, it really is from a sort of theological or spiritual perspective.
But you know what the people are going to say, what they are going to say, and this is something which is very often even used by some scholars, is as we don't want to deal with the reality of what is happening on the ground, we come to the general Islamic principles of saying, oh, look, this is beautiful because this is Islam. Now, Muslims are sometimes in contradiction with this ideal picture, and we want an ideal image. So if now you would say, okay, I live in the West and I want the people to understand what is the ideal, the right image of a Muslim woman or Muslim women in within the society. How would you describe this? Without coming to the theory of how great it is in the books.
One thing I think that is important for Muslims, especially Muslims living in the West, is not to be too defensive, mm-hmm. and also not to let other people define the dialogue for us. I think one of the main problems with the way that Islam is discussed in the West is it's not really discussed as a faith or as a religion.
Yeah.
If you ask anyone who's at all educated in the Islamic tradition, they will say the center of Islam is God and the oneness of God and the absolute belief in that. And everything else comes out from that. But typically the approach towards Islam in the West, even in academic circles, tends to be a much more socio-cultural approach. And this is not discussing Islam, this is discussing Muslims, which is also a valid subject, but it's quite a different subject. And you don't ever see this approach with other faiths. For example, people don't usually engage in discussions of Christians. They discuss Christianity. I do agree it is important to take into consideration what experiences people really have. But again, it's very difficult to generalize. There are over a billion Muslims worldwide, and not everyone has the same experience, and people, of course, have the right to speak about their own experiences or other experiences.
Yes, that's all good. But now, I am a Muslim man. I want to understand you as a woman, as a Muslim woman. If you have to tell me and to tell the people around you, what is the essence of being a Muslim woman? What it is for you that it's now giving you a sense of dignity, and that you want the people to understand I'm who I am at the end of the day?
I don't believe there's a strong difference between the ideal essence of a Muslim man and the ideal essence of a Muslim woman. And this also is supported by the way the Holy Quran discusses.
So I will tell you this. Tell me, what do you think about the essence of a Muslim woman, and we'll see.
Well, what I'm saying is I don't see there's a gender difference in this regard. We are, according to Islamic theology, we're put into this world to develop our souls, to learn about the divine, to be tested, to see how is our soul, will we follow the right path, or will we be tempted and deceived by going the wrong way in this world. And then we finish up this life, we try to live in the best way possible, and purify our insides. And as the Holy Quran says, the person who is successful is the one who's purified their soul. As a Muslim, I would say that is my primary responsibility in life. Now, in the manner in which I choose to carry that out, there may be some gender-specific roles here and there. For instance, some people have children. Obviously, ladies bear the children, and men don't bear the children. So there is a bit of gender specificity there. But in general, the main idea is the same.
But if someone, for example, say the perception we were talking about, subjugation and being, you know, submission to the men and all this, if as a Muslim woman living in the West, would you say you are a free woman? And if yes, what is the essence of this freedom you are talking about?
I think I am a free person, inshallah. And from a religious perspective, the essence of freedom is, in addition to not having realistic constraints tying someone down, like being imprisoned or something, it is freedom through faith and not being...
What does it mean?
Being free from being too attached to things in this world that would distract you from God. Of course, we live in this world and we aren't supposed to abandon it, but nonetheless, not being controlled by worldly desires or interests, so, and being able to keep your head above that and make the best decisions.
So spiritual freedom.
I think so.
This is the essence. Does it mean that spiritual freedom is going against social freedom? Are you socially free? Or should the people around us in the West understand that a Muslim woman is socially free?
I doubt anyone in this world, regardless of their faith, is truly completely socially free unless they live on an island somewhere. And I do think there are any number of social challenges we might face. There are some places, for example, that I wouldn't feel comfortable working as a Muslim lady in hijab because I know I would get a lot of negative reactions. But in general, I consider myself free here. I don't think I am unfairly restricted in any ways, and that's a blessing. I mean, there are many ways we are not free. For some people, it's poverty or lack of opportunity, inability to move around. So I think I do have a lot of freedom here, and I'm fortunately free from all of those fetters.
You are coming from the West. You converted to Islam, so you know this is your culture. And then you heard, and I'm quite sure when you converted to Islam, some people would have said, what are you doing? And you're entering a world which is not our world. Now, if we want to change this image, if you feel what is said about Islam and you feel it's not true, this is not what you experience in your daily life, what are the priorities? What should we change in the West to change the perception?
Well, this is something that is very difficult, of course, because it is fairly deeply rooted in history and some of the conflict between some Islamic states and some Western states. There are a number of ways we can approach this. I don't think there's one way. I think positive involvement in the media is a good way to promote a healthy image of Islam. I think also as Muslims, sometimes, I'm not saying everyone, but there is a tendency to be a bit inward-looking and defensive instead of being open and welcoming and inviting people to hear about our faith. And I'm not specifically speaking about attempts to convert people now, but simply to raise awareness. Sometimes that sense of welcoming is not always there like it should be in some of our religious institutions. And I think to promote more of a sense of openness and not necessarily being so afraid of the broader society, I think that might be able to help too. And of course, everyone is different. The way a group gets accepted in a society is a lengthy process. I think by our mere involvement in society, positive involvement, eventually, hopefully, some of these stereotypes will be dispelled.
So more visibility on the social side.
And also articulating our own experience. If we are not willing to come forward and define for ourselves what it means to be a Muslim, and instead we have other people telling us what they think the important issues regarding Islam are, then we aren't necessarily going to get anywhere. I do have to say I am very disturbed by the way Islam is discussed in the mass media nowadays. The types of issues they choose to define Islam with really... It's very disturbing.
But what you said is quite important. You said we have to set the scene. We have to use our own terminology. And still, when we talk about women, very often we ourselves, Muslims, are talking about the headscarf, are talking about the sensitive issues that we know are part of, you know, the media campaigns or landscape. Now, if we want to change this image, what would be the first topic? And when you are saying, for example, spiritual freedom, as a woman, what would be the first field or challenge when it comes to terminology and when it comes to a topic that we would tackle as a woman to say, this is who I am?
Well, faith is not that complex of a topic in the sense it is something people understand. I do think a bigger challenge with discussing that here is the love of secularism in the society today, and there's a bit of a general allergy to religion among a lot of people, and unfortunately some hatred and very negative views towards faith. And that's a very difficult environment to have this discussion in. If you're speaking with people who do openly and publicly value faith of some kind or another, then it's easier to begin the discussion from a theological perspective. But if they're just saying faith is backwards and God is outdated, and so just live and have fun, it's difficult. And this is something even the Quran acknowledges, that for those people who are very consciously atheistic, not just people who don't care about faith, it's difficult to make that connection with them. But nonetheless, this is how I would do it. And in fact, it is how I discuss these subjects, if I'm asked to do so, beginning from a religious perspective, not
religion,
a sociological perspective.
Religion, faith. And now what about, for example, your job, your presence, your family? It's as if when it comes to, for example, talking about family in Islam, and with Muslims, at least with Muslims today, it's as if the heart of the family and the center, the pillar of family, are women, the wife, and not the man. while we all know now that we are also facing this crisis. And the perception, once again, you know, I was talking with people at the grassroots level in Rotterdam and in France, in London here, and people are saying, it's as if we are talking to women who are very much involved with the family, and the fathers and the husbands are absent. So we can't only change the image by talking about theology and faith. We also have to deal with this. So how would you describe your role today within the Muslim community?
Well, my role is...
role of woman, not your
role. My role.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, like I said, I don't necessarily divide it up the way you do. I don't think there is a specific role for women in Islam, of course, in this era.
In the Muslim community today, there is no specific role?
No, I don't think there's one specific role. Mm. I understand it's quite popular to discuss the role of women in Islam, but women, like men, are put into a variety of roles in our lives, and our responsibility is to fulfill those roles to the best of our ability. Hmm. With regards to the family, I'm not really sure I agree. I think a very large number of the men in our community are very involved with their families and are very caring and responsible
fathers. Oh,
they are,
fathers, of course. I'm not generalizing. I'm just saying that the figures are showing that we have lots of problems with the absent father in Muslim families as much as we have in the other family, the surrounding family.
Well, this is a problem worldwide. In fact,
yes,
it's probably
exactly.
always been a problem yeah. throughout history. But I still think, at least as far as perceptions go, we are perceived as being a community that has fairly strong family values.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I still think, in general, that perception is accurate. I'm not saying we don't have social problems or family problems in our community. I wouldn't say that at all. But I still think... We do. We have managed to hold on to having strong family values in most Muslim cultures and among most Muslim peoples. So I would say this is more of a positive thing.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I think that during this discussion, we have been able to come back to this, the important dimension, which is, once again, when we are talking about the ideal image, it's quite important to understand the perceptions around. And these perceptions are sometimes completely wrong, and sometimes they are not completely wrong, but they are not connected to what the Muslims are experiencing. And what you said, which is important, is to start by using our terminology, the substance, the essence, and your take on that was to start with religion and faith before coming to social issues and problems, and to go beyond the divide, which is the West on one side and the Muslims, is just to come to the common ground, the common values and objectives, and then to get it through a discussion which is based on our way of dealing with the essence of Islam, and to try to change the perception about women. It's not an easy task, it's not difficult, and it takes time. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is the way to contact us.
We'd like to hear your views on today's show, as well as ideas for future programs. You can do this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also join our Facebook page by searching Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can view past programs, keep up to date on future shows, leave comments, and meet other Islam and Life fans.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Amina Inlod. Thank you so much for your presence and your input. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.